Science Corp., I may be saying that wrong, versus Innova Systems, Inc. Ms. Farina. Okay, Ms. Farina, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors.
How do I say your client's name?
It's Proveris Scientific.
Proveris, got it.
And I am here on behalf of Proveris Scientific. With me is Barry Schindler from the law.
And you're Ms. Farina, right?
Farina, yes. With me is Barry Schindler from the law firm of Greenberg Traurig. Your Honors, based simply on the intrinsic record in this case, the court can affirm Claim 3 and at the outset should look specifically at the preamble to narrow the scope of Claim 3 by virtue of the Federal Circuit's decision in the Proveris, what we call the Proveris 3 case, which is cited at 739 F3rd 1367, also in our joint appendix at page 536. Based on that case, the rule between the parties in this case is that the preamble is in fact limiting. It was an argument that third-party requester Innova Systems raised in defense to contempt, and Innova won on that argument. The Federal Circuit ruled that the preamble...
Right, but we have a mystery. We know that there is a binding precedent that says the preamble limits Claim 3, right? But we don't know what it is, right? We don't know what the precise limitation is because the board didn't tell us, right?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's true. The Federal Circuit told us at least what one aspect of the preamble is limiting. Because what the Federal Circuit did was looked first to the specification to find, quote, that the specification identifies the invention as producing a sequential set of images and focuses on the ability of the invention to capture the time evolution of the spray. The Federal Circuit then looked at the preamble to Claim 3 and said it's the only reference in any independent claim to the inventive concept of capturing a sequence of images in order to characterize the time evolution of the spray plume. That's at pages A543.
I see. Now, what's that mean in the English language?
I'm sorry?
What's that mean in the English language for writing a limitation in the claim, adding something to Claim 3 that isn't already there?
It's not adding anything to Claim 3, Your Honor, because the preamble that's in Claim 3 states that the apparatus is for producing image data representative of at least one sequential set of images of a spray plume. The Federal Circuit found that that language means or it incorporates the concept of capturing the time evolution of a spray plume because it's the only place in any independent claim where that inventive concept is found. So it's not adding anything to the claim. There's nothing that has to be added into this claim to affirm it. It's all in the intrinsic record and actually first in the claim itself. So looking at that language, the Federal Circuit and Proveris 3 then went on and looked at the body of the claim, noting that an imaging device for generating the image data, the phrase the image data clearly derives antecedent basis from the phrase image data in the preamble.
Counsel, I feel like you need to get to your point. I think that you're strangely arguing with Judge Clevenger over something that I don't even understand. Everybody agrees the preamble is a limitation. The fact that there's antecedent basis is irrelevant. That's only going to whether there's antecedent basis goes to whether it's a limitation. That's something we're bound by. So why don't you get to your point, which it seems to me is the point that Judge Clevenger was trying to move you along to, which is you say the preamble should be limiting, and in particular, one of your arguments that seems quite important to you is the geometric plane and whether it has to be one geometric plane at a time. And so why don't you get to that with specificity? Why does this preamble, which just says along a geometric plane, necessarily limit the claim to one geometric plane at a time?
Because when you're looking at the preamble, a geometric plane, and by virtue of what is being described in the preamble, it has to happen one geometric plane at a time. Now what the board did is look at the specification and say, and admitted, the board admitted that the specification only depicts one plane at a time and repeatedly refers to one plane at a time except for in one place. And in one place, the specification does disclose, and this is on page 86.
What do you mean by one plane at a time? Explain to me in the working of the invention, what does that mean?
Okay, what that means, and this is claim three, is that an illuminator.
You shine a light, right?
But not any particular light, because light that projects along multiple planes is like light in this room.
Okay, so right? are you arguing that you basically need a structured light?
Exactly, that projects a thin sheet of light, and there's no dispute about the thin sheet.
I'm sort of trying to put the pieces together,
sure.
Because when you were originally in front of your examiner a long time ago, to distinguish over prior art, which was a beam art, a laser light, you said we're not that.
Right.
We are structured light.
Exactly.
We said we're structured light. So that, I mean, you wouldn't be able to go out and sue infringement over somebody that used a beam.
You say
that's the kind of light we are.
That's right.
And you say that's the reason why we're that kind of light is because of the kind of measurements we're trying to achieve in an accurate way, and you can't get those with a beam of light.
That's correct.
So that's what you say. So you say that's what we're talking about. And it gets into this one plane. The board seems to think you mean only one plane at a time as opposed to many planes with all.
Provera says one plane at a time. The board said that by virtue of the specification's disclosure of an illumination device adapted to simultaneously or sequentially illuminate the spray, etc., that because it said simultaneously, it means two. Now, here's the interesting part, because the
board... Let me come back. But the way I was seeing the case was that you were trying to say, basically what my invention is doing is using structured light as my illuminating source. And we distinguish over prior art that doesn't.
Correct.
You then have a bunch of stuff happening in the district court that never really gets to claim construction. You finally get up to the Federal Circuit and they say, oh, whoops, wait a second, your preamble limits the claim, but we can't figure it out. We'll let the district court do it on remand. Goes back to the district court. The district court...
Not quite right, Your Honor.
Well, our opinion adds some verbiage, talking a little bit about the preamble, but expressly says we're passing. We're not going to construe the claim.
Well, what the court said was that we're not going to construe the disputed language. That's what the court said. ANOVA raised the issue of one subclass.
So my point is you go back, and then the case goes through the process on the re-exam, and you get an original opinion on the re-exam. The board is saying, you made an argument here that you are limited to structured light. We reject that. Clearly, they reject that. You come back on the request on the rehearing, and you say, whoops, you haven't taken account of the preamble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aren't you somehow saying the preamble is helping to teach us that you have to use structured light?
The preamble does that and more than that. For instance, with the preamble, and this is why we bring up the Provera 3 case. Right.
Well, stick with me. I mean, you're saying that you agree with me thus far that you're saying to the board on the rehearing, if you take account of the preamble the way you were told to,
right,
that you'll appreciate that we were right all along that structured light is required for the invention.
Yes, and for other reasons, because you don't even have to get to structured light for the majority of the
I understand that, but what other reason?
The other reason is the sequence of images that is the only place where the inventive concept of a time evolution of the spray is found. Only one reference in all the cited references even remotely discloses a time evolution of the spray.
Okay, but that has to do with the prior art reading on the properly interpreted claims. What I was understanding that you were trying to achieve here was the fact that your claim has been misunderstood from claim day one at the original examiner.
And that's true.
When you were trying to say what we were limited to, it followed straight through. When you're reminded on your rehearing, look at the preamble, you'll understand that.
Yes.
And once you've done that, then you're going to have to go back and relook at the prior art.
What the preamble gets to with the reference to a geometric plane as antecedent basis for the later claimed along at least one geometric plane is essentially that it can only be one geometric plane at a time.
I don't see how. I mean, at least one geometric plane, your definition would read out the at least one. Your claim says at least one, so that means this claim covers two or three or four.
No, it wouldn't, Your Honor, because with the structured light source, with the geometric plane, in order to do, for instance, what's disclosed in claim five, the illuminator has to be able to project along at least one geometric plane.
But if it's diffuse light, why can't it project along two?
Well, that's what's disclosed in the specification as the alternative, simultaneous or sequential. But your claim is sequential.
No, your claim is at least one geometric plane. The plain language of that includes and anticipates coverage of more than one.
But not at the same time.
Why not? You're not at the same time language would actually seem to me to be completely inconsistent with the claim language.
It's not that when you look at along a geometric plane that intersects the spray plane.
That's the preamble. But the body of the claim says along at least one geometric plane. The body of the claim expressly says at least one. That means it expressly covers two or three or four and anticipates that.
No, not in this case. Because
well, then you should have chose different claim language.
No, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with that because when you look at the specification, everything in the specification, as the board even admits,
tell me how to understand the at least one language.
Because when you look at Claim 5, which is dependent and therefore can't be broader than Claim 3, Claim 5 expressly discloses a first time sequential set of images and then a second time sequential set of images. If Claim 3 were to be read the way the board would have it be read, then Claim 5 would be broader. So it can't happen like that.
You want us to read the Claim 2 to teach a single plane of light.
Right, the illuminator has to do
it. But doesn't the prior art teach that as well? I mean, it seems to me that even if we adopt your claim construction, that you lose because of the prior art.
No, the prior art doesn't teach a geometric plane at all. None of the illuminators in the prior art actually teach that. And then, even if the court concluded that it did, which Prevert disagrees with, but even if it did, that's where the preamble also becomes important because none of the references, with the possible exception of the Mizik reference, teaches capturing the time evolution of a spray plume along a geometric plane. It physically can't happen. That's like standing in the room right here and spraying a short duration spray
coming back to your one or more point, wasn't the board's view that because you can have, when you say at least one geometric plane, you have an infinite number of geometric planes, you produce a beam, right?
You're telling me
that you surrendered scope in terms of a beam, right?
We're not claiming beam at all.
Yeah, but if you have an infinite number of geometric planes,
you have a beam.
You end up a beam.
Right, which we're not claiming.
Well, but I'm trying to get you back to the point, talking with the presiding judge about what one or more means, mm-hmm. you know, in here. And you're saying, oh, no, no, you think that it's talking about more than one, but not at the same time.
What's
so there's just a disconnect in the one or more here. And the short of the matter is that you feel you've disclaimed an infinite number
absolutely.
Of planes because that produces the beam.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
But so your claim covers a whole lot of images, right?
Depends on what you mean by that. What the claim covers is only a sequence of images along a geometric plane. However, that geometric plane could shift so that the first sequential set of images is perpendicular to a short duration spray. The second set of images is at a 40 degree angle change from the perpendicular.
So you agree there could be an infinite number of geometric planes.
But only one at a time. And even if the board even recognizes that, and I direct you to pages 39 and 40 of the appendix.
When the Ms. Farina, you've used all of your rebuttal time and all of your main time. I'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal, but I think finish your answer to Judge Clevenger's question, and then we need to move on.
Thank you, Your Honor. The board looked at, the board said, we don't find Proveris's, your use of the Norian case to be persuasive, because in the Norian case, it's the specification uses only a single solute and makes no reference to using a mixture of multiple solutes, etc. And then the board says, in contrast here, the specification supports simultaneously illuminating two geometric planes. On the next page, in footnote 2, the board says, look, we recognize that the specification describes simultaneously illuminating just two geometric planes. That's it. And then the board says, but there's nothing in the specification to suggest that it's limited only to two geometric planes, which is crazy because that puts Proveris in the position of having to provide negative disclosures for every type of light that's out there.
I think we have to stop you before you're in because that was a very long answer to Judge Clevenger's question. So let's hear from Mr. Pasilico.
Thank you.
Please, the court. My name is Joseph Pasilico. I'm representing Inova in this case. With me is Frank Carroll. We're from Fox Rothschild. The board's decision in this case should be affirmed for two very important fundamental reasons. The first one is that there is no error in the claim construction as the board presented. One of the things I'm going to do is go through and explain why there is no error. But Judge Reyna, as you mentioned, so that's one main reason. So there's no error. Given that there's no error, there's no reason for reversal. But the second reason is, even if you take Proveris' claim constructions, which they say the board should have made, the result is still the same. The decision here is the same. The prior art discloses the things that they are trying to read.
Well, you're asking us to make that determination.
Well, I'm actually not.
The board didn't make that determination. The board didn't read the prior art against a different claim construction.
Well, it actually did in connection with reviewing the petition for rehearing. So in the petition, so you're right, two things.
Well, let's just say that I disagree. I reach a conclusion that the board didn't properly take account of the preamble in the rehearing decision.
Okay.
Then you got to agree that they didn't read the prior art against the correct interpretation.
Well, except Proveris still loses, and the reason is because it's Proveris's burden to. Let's assume that's an error. It's Proveris's burden to show that error is not harmless error. Okay. In other words, would there have been a different result in this case? And Proveris spends almost its entire time in its brief saying that the claim construction is wrong, and no time providing this court with the ammunition it would need to say, and because of that different claim construction, when I apply that claim construction and I look at the prior art, I only have one conclusion, that the claims are not anticipated and the claims are, in fact, obvious. And they have not done that. There's not a scintilla of evidence in this case which establishes that, and it was their burden to do so. Notwithstanding that, we went ahead and we, by way of example, because there's 47 separate rejections in this case, by way of example, we included in our brief on page 11, just by way of example, a side-by-side comparison of the Proveris figure and the figure from Deljurovic, which the board cited the Deljurovic reference as anticipating Claim 15. And the reason we brought that to the court's attention is because Claim 15 expressly includes the limitation of a thin sheet of light that Proveris says should be read into the main claim.
Do you agree that in the original prosecution, Proveris surrendered a beam of light as an illuminating source?
No, Your Honor. There's no evidence of that.
It's at page 4 and 5 of their brief. They're talking about the prior art that was cited to them by the original examiner. This is Krohn-Schmidt and Gardner.
Yes, Your Honor. And
Krohn-Schmidt is a laser beam.
Well,
and they say we're not that.
Yes, yeah, so we have to be careful, and I think that's Appendix A255, which is a single page from the prosecution history that they rely on as allegedly constituting this surrender. And if you go to that page, first of all, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record that actually tells us what claims were pending in the case at that time. The one thing that's sure is they're not the claims as they issued, because the claims don't match up. If you read the remarks there, it says claim one is the only independent claim. So, but putting that aside, what they're saying in Krohn-Schmidt, Your Honor, is Krohn-Schmidt is the type of device where the laser beam is used to...
You see the drawing in Krohn-Schmidt, it just shines the beam straight through the plume.
Yes, and that's their point of distinction. They're saying that the purpose of the light in Krohn, and it's in there, they say this in their third full paragraph. They say the purpose of the light in Krohn is to have a light sensing device on the other side of the plume to measure how much the light is attenuated. So they're right in the sense that Krohn-Schmidt does not deal with the concept of illuminating the plume. Right. What they're saying is...
Well, they're not dealing with structured light. I'm coming back to the structured light v. non-structured light distinction.
Exactly. So there's nothing... It would have been very easy for Proveris during this prosecution to have said exactly what Ms. Farina just said. And that is, this patent is different than Krohn-Schmidt because it uses... Krohn-Schmidt uses unstructured light, and we use structure like that. That's never said.
Let's assume that I read it that way.
Well, okay. So the other problem you have with this, that you read this as...
I read the original prosecution for Proveris to say we use structured light, we only use beams.
Okay. So in other words, you're reading the page 255 that
right.
they are making the distinction.
They surrendered scope.
Well, Your Honor, I think even in that case,
You certainly would argue that if your client used a beam and they were trying to sue you for infringement, you'd say, ha-ha, they surrendered the scope during the original prosecution.
Yeah, let me try to answer your question
what
first.
What I'm trying to get at is, doesn't the invention require structured light?
I mean, no.
They're not going to get what they want without it?
Well, I don't know what they want, Your Honor, but...
The kind of readings they want in time.
They're, in order for them, to, and here's why I would answer your question as no, even if you could read this as distinguishing structured and unstructured light, which I'd like to get back to that because I don't think it does, but even if you read it that way, according to the SciMed case, you have to, the disavowal of claim scope has to be clear and I think the term they use is unmistakable, okay? In this particular case, so what did SciMed do? SciMed, the court looked at four factors all of those factors they looked at before they got to the prosecution history.
Okay, let me ask you just on another point. What, in your view, did the board think the preamble added to Claim 3? Because before the board, the original examiner, were looking at Claim 3, they ignored the preamble.
Well,
they did because the preamble doesn't contain any limitations. Right.
I mean,
so what, in your opinion, did the board think the preamble added to Claim 3?
Okay, so let me just, I do think the board didn't ignore the preamble even before the Proveris decision. They did mention it,
but
they weren't, they didn't focus on it.
Try answering the question.
Okay. What I think the board thought that the preamble added to the claim was this concept, the requirement that the device provide a time evolution sequence of images of the spray plume. Because that's what the Federal Circuit talked about in Proveris 3.
Where in the board's rehearing opinion would you point me to tell me that that's where I know what they're thinking?
Well, I could refer back, but I think that's
well,
what
that's
I...
That's helpful. I mean, you brought the opinion with you, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Rehearing opinion?
Yes,
so,
I did.
So to be candid with you, I'm having a little bit of an N. Ray Lee problem here. Mm-hmm. N. Ray Lee is a precedential case that says that when the patent office, through the board, renders its decisions, we're supposed to be able to understand what they say. So they clearly had an obligation to find something new in Claim 3 that wasn't there before, and they should tell us what it is and then tell us why it is that their previous decision on the prior art is the same.
Well, Your Honor, I would say, you know...
So show me in the rehearing decision, if you could, sir, mm-hmm. where they are accounting for what the preamble did to Claim 3.
Yes, sir. So if we look at... Bear with me one second. So that begins at
A37.
So I guess two things, Your Honor. One is the board respond
like in here, so they realize that they're supposed to take account of the preamble, right?
Correct. They realize that, and what the board did on rehearing, Your Honor, is responded to the points raised by Proveris in their request for rehearing. And Proveris articulated several arguments why the change in the preamble or the terminology from the preamble should affect the construction of the claim. And the board goes through it, they specifically identify one of those things, for example, was the issue that Judge Moore was talking about, it, and that is at the bottom of page A39. They repeat the patent owner's statement.
Sure, but I'm just looking for, they can say, no, we disagree with you, Proveris, with what you think the preamble did to the claim. But where does the board say, ha, here's what it does do?
Let's just see. Well, again, I think if the board does not lay out what I would call kind of a classic claim construction analysis in the rehearing. But I think what the board said is we've looked at, and the board did look at the preamble in the original decision. There was reference to the preamble in the original decision. They looked at this request.
They didn't recognize it as a limiting factor.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor.
Well,
because
they would have told us that.
But again, you know,
You will agree with me that in the rehearing decision, nowhere does the board tell us what it thinks the effect on Claim 3 is as a result of the preamble.
I agree, Your Honor. It does not interpret the preamble. But again, I think, Your Honor, on appeal here, the question is, even if the board should have interpreted the preamble, and even if the board had decided that the preamble means one plane at a time.
Right, but don't I need to know what the claim means in the light of the preamble so that I can decide whether you're right or, as Judge Reina said, his question was, well, isn't the result the same on the prior art? How do I know that until I know the correct interpretation?
Well, I think for the purposes of this appeal, Your Honor, the correct interpretation, if we give the benefit to Proveris, it's what they say the correct interpretation is. So in other words, we're here on appeal based upon Proveris' statement that the claim should have been interpreted according to mean X, Y, and Z. And in this case, that one plane means one, at least one plane, at least one geometric plane, which is the claim language, means only one plane at a time. That the term illuminator should be construed as a thin sheet of light, and that the term spray plume should mean only a spray plume that comes from a drug delivery device and lasts 1 second. That those are their three claim construction positions that they have argued was error for the board not to adopt. And on appeal here, it was Proveris' burden to establish for the benefit of this panel that those errors were not harmless errors, and they didn't do that. And that alone is sufficient for this board to say their appeal should be denied and the board decision affirmed. The only other point I'll make before I close is, Judge Moore, you had raised the question about the meaning of at least one, meaning only one, according to Proveris' construction. And in their, I think this is important to note, in their brief, they cite the Howmedica case for the proposition that it says at least one means only one. And that's not what the Howmedica case says. In fact,
they're
the Howmedica,
not saying it means that it's limited to one. They're saying it can be many, but only one at a time. That's different than the normal, you know, comprising language says, you know, at least one means one or more. They say, yeah, more than one, no question about it, in terms of the counting the numbers. They're just saying at a time.
Well,
that's a different matter.
Except if you say at one at a time, that is still a limitation on the at least one that's not in the claim. And it's constraining the...
Well, but that's also giving... allowing the preamble to breathe life into at least one.
Well, again, the other thing that's important to about
you,
this...
You agree that a preamble, right, can breathe life into a limitation that exists in the claim.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but here's why...
There's no case law that says it can't breathe life into at least one. In fact, we have a case that says it can.
Well, understood in that case, Your Honor, but in this particular case, I would posit this. First of all, the use of a geometric plane in the preamble does not have anything to do with the illuminator or the light. If you read the preamble that refers to a geometric plane, it's referring to the image. It's not referring to the illuminator.
At a predetermined instant in time.
No. So just to be clear, Your Honor, if we go back to the claim...
I'm talking about the preamble.
Exactly. So claim three, the preamble... Let me get there.
A spray plume along a geographic plane that intersects a plane and at a predetermined instant in time.
Yes, but that's not the point where they're talking about. If you look at the preamble, they're referring to the language that appears after small I. They see it says along a geometric plane, right, in claim three.
Yeah.
They're arguing that a there, it doesn't say at least one geometric plane, it says along a geometric plane. Their argument is that a is antecedent basis for their argument about structured light. But that's wrong, Your Honor, because that a geometric plane doesn't refer to the illuminator or the light at all. If you go back, it's referring to the image. It's saying the image is representative of a density characteristic of the spray plume along a geometric plane. It's not making any connection to the illuminator. So the image In that case, Your Honor, the camera is what takes the image. It can focus on a single geometric plane, even if the illuminator is illuminating multiple geometric planes. So it's a conflation of ideas.
And if that's an additional limitation that Proveris 3 said needs to be incorporated into the claim, is there any argument about whether that limitation is met in the accused device and the anticipation references?
No, I think there's no question about that, because one of Proveris' arguments is that if you look, for example, at page 11 of our brief, we see that the Delgiorovic reference has a single image, one geometric plane at a time, and it describes that the video camera takes a video image along that one geometric plane. And the question about whether the prior art discloses a time evolution of the plume is really a red herring, because most of this prior art discloses a video camera.
Okay, we're way over time, so we're going to have to stop now. Let's let Ms. Farina come up and give her 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity for some brief replies.
Well, your adversary says even if you're right on claim construction, you lose because you haven't made it showing to us that it makes any difference. They say your brief doesn't deal with, doesn't go through the prior art and say, okay, we're right on claim construction, and for that reason, the board's wrong on the way it read the prior art.
2 points to that, Your Honor. First of all, we requested rehearing with the board in order to provide a full argument regarding the preamble. We were denied it. So we haven't had the opportunity.
No, he's talking about what you said to us.
Right. Well, looking specifically to the Proveris III Court's decision in context with the body of the claim in the preamble, the Proveris Court III decision explicitly stated that the image data in the body of the claim derives antecedent basis from image data.
Yeah, but you're not answering my question. Your adversary says even if you're right on the claim construction, you haven't made any showing in your brief that the board is wrong. You haven't made any showing in your brief that the prior art, this is the point that Judge Reyna was raising, I believe, the first point he raised today.
I disagree, Your Honor. I direct the court to page 17 of our reply brief, because in that, on page 17, we have a chart that shows that the references that are raised, at least for anticipation, don't include image data, as image data narrows the patent in the preamble. It's talking specifically about capturing a sequence of images to capture the time evolution of the spray and being along a geometric plane. So none of the references uses a geometric plane to capture a sequence of images at a predetermined instant of time of a density characteristic that includes the time evolution of the spray.
Doesn't Gilberush disclose a planar region of illumination to capture images of a planar regions within a flow?
I'm sorry, which reference?
The Delgiorovic. Delgiorovic.
Delgiorovic does not capture any sequence of images to characterize the time evolution of the spray, which is what the Proveris III court found to be limiting in its decision. There's no disclosure whatsoever that anything like that is happening before you even get to what along at least one geometric plane means. You don't even have to reach that question for Delgiorovic, because they're not capturing, disclosing, or even addressing in any way the time
evolution. What does the camera do in that reference?
I'm sorry?
What does the camera do in that reference?
In Delgiorovic?
Yes.
It's filming what they're doing, but they're not capturing a time evolution of the spray. In that case, it's a steady flow. It's just on. There is no time evolution. And again, what you have to do is go back to the specification, and I address the court to the Pacing Technologies case. Came out this year. Pacing Technology talks explicitly about disavowal. When you look at the specification, you look at the intrinsic record, there is nothing anywhere that talks about anything other than a geometric plane. The only time
you're well over your time, Ms. Farina, so we're going to have to close for today. Thank both counsel for their